The circuit-riding preacher used to ride across the land with a rifle on his saddle and a Bible in his hand. He told the prairie people all about the promised land as he went riding, singing down the trail.
Good evening. It is March 14th, 2023, and this is Living by the Sword with Pastor Sam and the Gospel Gunslingers. I'm your host, Samuel Honnold, broadcasting from exile in Mexico's cartel country from the Badlands beyond the Rio Grande. It's been a long week of tragic deaths, kidnappings, retaliatory gunfights, military and police activity, and above all, international intrigue. The peso is its strongest against the dollar in the last 5 years. It's the one world currency that's got the dollar on the ropes and is absolutely battering it. And on top of that, the head of OPEC came to Mexico. That's right, Mexico is joining the Cool Kids, the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries. No high official from OPEC has ever come to Mexico, let alone the Secretary General of this great global organization. Everybody wonders why the warmongering Republicans are talking about invading Mexico. Lindsey Graham, Bill Barr, Dan Crenshaw, that turncoat. But the petrodollar has more problems than that. The bank runs are on, the bank closures, the bank failures, the FDIC seizures. The feds are racing to stop the free fall, but it may already have attained critical mass.
Still hear my guitar.
ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully. I'm Pastor Sam, and this is your GospelGunslingers.com Bible verse of the day, Luke's Gospel, chapter 12, 20, and 21. Most of this week, we're going to be in the Old Testament, and I'm going to show you how the Lord has laid this precedent of how he tears down mighty empires. Even the global reign of the dollar, God is able to rip it all down, although it has to happen in phases. And some of those phases are happening right now. So let's look at it in the Bible. The ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully. This is Luke 12, starting in 16. And he thought within himself, saying, "What shall I do, because I have no room where to bestow my fruits?" But Pastor Sam, I thought in the Gospel Gunslingers you were going to teach us how to stay alive and how to overcome. All right, well, this guy loses his life. So this is how you don't do it. Don't be like this guy. And everybody is like this guy. The level of greed and selfishness in our modern society is off the chart. All these financial fads like paying it forward and tipping in the super chat, it is a drop in the bucket. In the Bible, this man, a certain rich man, has too much loot. He's got no place to put it. And so he's thinking, "Oh, what am I going to do?" Verse 18. And he said, "This will I do. I will pull down my barns." That is, demolish his barns. "I'll pull down my barns and build greater, and there will I bestow all my fruits and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul," I'll say to myself, "self," this is what he says, "I'll say to my soul, soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry." Here's your verse of the day. "But God said unto him, thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Then whose shall be those things? Then whose shall those things be which thou hast provided? So is he that layeth up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God." Is that amazing? God demands this guy's soul, just jerks his soul out of him like Sub-Zero snatching out his spine. This is why people serve the baby Jesus, because they don't want to deal with the God who is a consuming fire. And this is in red, by the way. These are the words of the Lord Jesus when he walked the earth. And after this comes the famous passage, and a lot of Christians don't want to hear this. They don't want to get close to this, but someday you'll need this, so hide it in your heart. "And he said unto his disciples, therefore I say unto you, take no thought for your life what ye shall eat, neither for the body what ye shall put on. Consider the ravens, for they neither sow nor reap, which neither have storehouse nor barn, and God feedeth them. How much more are ye better than the fowls?" That opening tune was a reburn of Igor and the Red Elvises' On My Way to Vegas. Well, we're not on in Vegas tonight. The plug got pulled on that. And I will get on with my scoldings about freeloaders in a little while. Just understand that, like Buddy in Six String Samurai, of which that tune is a part of the soundtrack, an integral, maybe the title track of the soundtrack, On My Way to Vegas, I have walked the deserts on, I believe, every side of Las Vegas, very much like Buddy with death stalking behind. I just wish more people would take these warnings seriously. And eventually, they will. But as for now, the world hasn't seen enough pain yet. They haven't seen enough punishment. Chastisement, yes. The instruments of the churl are evil, Isaiah 32:7. You know what a churl is? It's a miserly person. It's a selfish person. It is a stingy person, a person who's not liberal with God. Let's read this verse. "The instruments also of the churl are evil. He deviseth wicked devices to destroy the poor." That's who they want to destroy, the guy out walking around in the desert. "To destroy the poor with lying words, even when the needy speaketh right." But here Isaiah prophesies also about the churl. "The vile person shall be no more called liberal, nor the churl said to be bountiful." That's Isaiah 32:5. Tonight, your Latin America war report and migrant invasion news is going to be focused on the banking collapse. The bank runs. Fox News Live said this is the biggest bank run in U.S. history. The bank run at SVB Bank, Silicon Valley Bank. And do you know when that bank run started? Do you know when the collapse began? on the Feast of Purim. Yes, Purim is 2 days, Monday night to Tuesday night, Tuesday night to Wednesday night. And lo and behold, on the second day of Purim, Wednesday, SVB Bank made an announcement. By Thursday, the bank run was on, and we're not talking about people standing at the teller window wanting to stack $100 bills. We're talking about $1 million a second for 10 hours straight. $42 billion were withdrawn out of SVB Bank Thursday alone. The stock in SVB Bank, which was $700 not long ago, began to plummet. On Friday, not at close of business, right in the middle of the day, trading of SVB Bank stock was halted. The doors were locked. The FDIC stepped in. First, the California Regulating Authority. Then the FDIC came in, all under the promise that the bank would open again on Monday. There are many more details to share, but the central question is this the end? It may be, it may not be. The federales have certainly worked feverishly throughout the weekend, but maybe all the king's horses and all the king's men cannot put Humpty together again. They may be able to stop it, which really just kicks the can on down the road with money printing and excess spending and quantitative easing and Federal Reserve chicanery. But make no mistake, this is a runaway train. It is a runaway train. And maybe, maybe, maybe it'll get stopped before it runs out of track, before it is a catastrophic pileup. But right now, the contagion is already spreading. This is an extremely dangerous situation. So first of all, let's talk about how bad it is. How bad is the biggest bank run in U.S. history? This is the second biggest bank failure in U.S. history after Washington Mutual. And that's just SVB. That is not the hangers-on. That is not the consequential failures that are now beginning to cascade after SVB. The FDIC, Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, is in there now running SVB Bank. And they guarantee, they have a fund. Now, that fund has limits, and it's only enough to cover about 1% of the insured deposits. So once critical mass is attained, once bank runs begin, once bank failures begin, once this bank stock falls, which causes others to fall, and the domino effect gets going, once that begins, the FDIC's funding capability will be exhausted very quickly. But as far as one bank, they can cover that. Five banks, they can cover, even if they're pretty big. But each depositor at each bank is only covered up to $250,000. Used to be $100,000 when I was a kid. The majority of the clientele of SVB is corporate. It's Silicon Valley. It's tech startups. It's vineyards and wineries. It is green technology startup companies, venture capital companies that just hold huge slush funds and decide who they're going to pass out the money to and try to make a buck or blow trying to mold the world into their image. Just for example, Roku has $480 million in SVB Bank. That's money they use for payroll for their extensive operations broadcasting by satellite around the world. And this is the real threat. What if a company like Roku could not make payroll? What if they go insolvent? What if they have to go into Chapter 11? What if they have to declare some type of bankruptcy or legal protection because they can't pay their creditors? That is how the domino effect and the snowball effect happens, how the problem gets bigger and bigger the further it goes. Oprah Winfrey supposedly has $580 million in SVB Bank now. I haven't been able to confirm that, but that's the scuttlebutt. Okay, so that's just SVB Bank, but other banks have been affected. On Sunday, Silvergate Bank, which had reduced in stock price 90% since its high a year ago, closed on Sunday. State regulators stepped in, shut the bank down on Sunday, and took it over. So that bank is also insolvent. Western Alliance Bank is down. Signature Bank, New York's famous Signature Bank, their stock price is down 76%. That is before trading was halted on Friday. Signature Bank of New York is a huge deal because of its interconnection with the crypto market and different crypto coins. Signature was also Donald Trump's bank of choice before he was president. They made the loan for him to build out the Mar-a-Lago property and golf course. And Ivanka Trump was on the board from 2011 to 2013, this according to Yahoo Finance. Now here's the real troubling news. Coinbase Crypto has $240 million in Signature. Now that's way beyond the FDIC limit. Coinbase and perhaps other cryptos could crash just over the closing of New York's Signature Bank. And even though they're based in New York, these are national banks. Some of them, SVB, for example, had branches overseas. PacWest Bank, their trading was also halted on Friday, down 37.9%. First Republic Bank, the 16th largest in the nation, was down 50% and somehow bounced back before Friday's close of trading to 14.8% daily loss net. Okay, now for the good news. This is the sigh of relief as Asian stocks are trading as I record this and trading optimistically because there's a bailout. Janet Yellen and the Fed board, they've got a bailout underway where they're going to cover all the losses at SVB Bank. This is after many promises that there would not be a bailout, especially conservative politicians. Lauren Boebert tweeted immediately, no bailout, never again will there be a bailout, no more too big to fail, no more quantitative easing, no more money printing our way out of these problems, because the threat of that is collapsing the entire U.S. economy and the dollar, which as we discussed and will discuss further, is already under threat from many different directions right now. There's a point where when that snowball's coming down the mountain, the last thing you want to do is jump in front of it. Just one consequence of a bailout is that that federal money, the printed money, the FDIC so-called insurance money, which is just slush fund money that's made out of nothing, that money goes to the fat cats first. It goes to the Oprah Winfreys and the big tech companies in Silicon Valley and the ultra wealthy. Which means it's not available for John Q. Public, for the people that are working, that are trying to make a buck, that have a little nest egg together, that have a little equity in their home, that have a college fund for their kids or some money for a rainy day. There's nothing left for that guy because Oprah got her $580 million first. There are a lot of questions about this situation and very few answers. But one thing that I can tell you for certain is that this is the hand of God. For it to occur right smack dab in the middle of the Purim festival, the very feast where the children of Israel celebrate that God gave them victory over their enemies, over all that hated them and would destroy them and would lift up their hand against them. And we preached on this last week extensively. So this is not the globalists pulling the support out from under the system. It is not the big move to move the world to a digital currency. It is not the conspirators. It's not them. They're the ones that have lost their tail. They've lost their tail first. And that's why I believe it's important that their bacon not get saved, not get pulled out of the fire, and that they not be ruled too big to fail. Let's let them suffer like the whole rest of the world. We can share the wealth on that. Elijah is more than a little bummed out that his nation won't repent. He smoked the nation with 3.5 years of drought and famine. He slew the prophets of Baal with the sword. 450 prophets of Baal and 400 more prophets of the groves which did eat at Jezebel's table. Elijah slew all of them. The Lord turned the people's nation, he turned the nation's hearts back to him. He even instituted revival. He poured out a revival and still it wasn't enough. Elijah had to eat angels' bread and walk 40 days and 40 nights into Arabia and meet with God on the mountain of God. And here's Elijah's complaint. This is 1 Kings 19:14. I have been very jealous for the Lord God of hosts, because the children of Israel have forsaken thy covenant, thrown down thine altars, and slain thy prophets with the sword. And I, even I only, am left, and they seek my life to take it away. Elijah was trying to rip down this entire, really, global empire at the time. And it was very entrenched. And even after all that God had done through him, Ahab the king, the wicked king, was still alive. Jezebel was still alive, the daughter of Ethbaal the Sidonian. And Elijah flatly asks to die. He wants to retire out of the earth realm. Of course, we know that Elijah doesn't die. He went up to heaven in a chariot of fire with horses of fire. But this is what the Lord told him to do before he could come to heaven. And this is your GospelGunslingers.com Bible verse of the day. 1 Kings 19:17. And it shall come to pass that him that escapeth the sword of Hazael shall Jehu slay, and him that escapeth from the sword of Jehu shall Elisha slay. Now, I referenced this in a prior teaching. Now let's look at it in depth. What the Lord says to Elijah is that he is to prepare replacements. A replacement king of Israel, a replacement Syrian king to replace Ben-Hadad and be over their enemies, because God is going to give power to those enemies to come and chastise his nation, and finally, to choose a successor prophet who will receive a double portion of his spirit. And then the Lord also makes another promise in 18, "Yet I have left me 7,000 in Israel, all the knees which have not bowed unto Baal, and every mouth which hath not kissed him." So the Lord promised that there was a remnant. And sure enough, Elijah gets a pinch hitter in the actual destruction of Ahab. Elijah prophesies against Ahab and Naboth's vineyard, but then Micaiah the prophet comes and sees the armies of heaven before the Lord, and the lying spirit sent into the prophets of Baal, and decrees that Ahab will go up to this battle to his death, and says, "If you ever return safely, the Lord has not spoken by me."
They want to vote. Sit down.
If it's money they want,
nobody talks. Heads down. Keep your heads down and nobody look them in the eye, or they'll kill you.
This is the attack of the Burmese pirates from the film Rambo in 2008. This is the fourth in the Rambo franchise and is often referred to as Rambo 4 or John Rambo. A good part of it was filmed in Mexico. I really wanted to get to this last week. I ran out of time and was not able to play these clips for you, but today we're going to play a little bit from 2008 Rambo. In this film, Rambo ferries a group of pacifist preachers into the war zones of Burma. Rambo tries to reason with these people, tries to convince them that they live in a fantasy world and that they don't want to be going into the war zone. Of course, today the war zones are coming for us, whether you're in an American city or any part of the world. There is maybe no more civilization left that looks like it's going to really stand the test of time. For this mission team, their baptism of fire is running into the Burmese pirates. This is where they first have a mortal peril, where their fantasy world collides with the brutal violence of the wicked. Let's back it up a little bit to when the pacifist preacher and medical doctor, these are educated people, he is a physician, asks Rambo to take him up the river. And even though he doesn't believe in violence, he's pretty aggressive and assertive in this conversation. That's typical.
"I was told it might be possible to rent your boat. We'd like to do that. Is that possible? We need to get upriver."
"Where are you going?"
"Into Burma."
"Burma's a war zone."
"Well, that's what people call it, but it's more like genocide than war. Anyway, this will be my fifth trip in, so we are aware of all the risks."
"I don't go that far north."
"Let me explain our situation. Our church is part of a Pan-Asian ministry located in Colorado. We're all volunteers who, around this time of year, bring in medical supplies, medical attention, prayer books, and support for the Karen tribes people. People say you know the river better than anyone."
"They lied."
"So what I'm asking is that we compensate you for a few hours of your time that will help change people's lives.
Are you bringing in any weapons?
Of course not.
You're not changing anything.
Well, it's thinking like that that keeps the world the way it is.
Fuck the world.
It takes a good while for the word of the Lord to Elisha to come to pass. It takes a good while for his successors to rip down all the different aspects of this vile global order that he was dealing with by prophecy. Ahab finally dies. That took, I guess, a few years. Then his son Jehoram reigns in his stead, 2 Kings 3:1. He reigns for 12 years, and we'll see how Jehu killed him tomorrow. So we're looking at a period of maybe 15 years. I guess I'm not the only one to be weary that the presidencies come and go and the wars come and go and the Lord's kingdom is not fully established in the earth, but it will be, and there is an acceleration. And here we have the typology across these 15 years that there was war after war with the Syrians, drought after drought, famines and sieges. Jehoram the king was humbled to some degree as he went about praying on the wall over Samaria in a siege. He had sackcloth under his garments. He was mourning before the Lord. But his queen mother, Jezebel, was still alive and still causing trouble and still had her prophets of Baal. Until one day, Elisha gets a visitor. He's hanging out in his thatch hut, just like Pastor Sam. And up comes Hazael, this mighty general under Ben-Hadad, the king of Syria. And he comes to visit the prophet and to inquire whether Ben-Hadad will recover from his sickness. Well, this is the guy. His visitor of the day is the man, Hazael of Syria, who is supposed to be anointed king of Syria to chastise the people Israel. And let's look at it in 2 Kings 8 and 11. Elisha the prophet, he settled his countenance steadfastly until he was ashamed, and the man of God wept. And Hazael said, "Why weepest, my lord?" And he answered, "Because I know the evil that thou wilt do unto the children of Israel. Their strongholds wilt thou set on fire, and their young men wilt thou slay with the sword, and wilt dash their children, and rip up their women with child." Verse 13, "And Hazael said, But what is thy servant, a dog, that he should do this great thing? And Elisha answered, The Lord hath showed me that thou shalt be king over Syria." So Hazael returns, I guess, to Damascus, carrying the word of the Lord that he is to tell his master Ben-Hadad that he will recover. But the prophet said, "The Lord has shown me that he will surely die." Ben-Hadad did die because Hazael took a thick cloth wet with water and smothered him with it. I know everybody's praying for revival, and so am I, and praise God for that. But part of the duties of a prophet is also to anoint adversaries to punish the Lord's people when they're in rebellion. Wanted, young, skinny, wiry fellows, not over 18, must be expert horsemen, willing to risk death daily, orphans preferred. That was the text of the old Pony Express ad, pasted to signposts in St. Joseph, Missouri. Such were the pioneers that made our nation great, from sea to shining sea. Today, also, God is looking for a few good men. He's looking for a few pistol-packing mamas. And I invite you to be among that number, to support your local gunfighter, to help us to broadcast. I want to be your pastor, and I want to be your missionary. Send me a prayer request. Send me a letter. Send me a dollar. You can also do it online at gospelgunslingers.com. Tell me your thoughts that you would like broadcast on the airwaves all the way to Antarctica. My mailing address is Pastor Sam Honnold, H-O-N-N-O-L-D, 7107 South Yale Avenue, number 434, Tulsa, Oklahoma, 74136, USA. Let's be brothers in arms. I covet your friendship. Let's be fellow soldiers struggling for our free hemisphere. I cannot be out here on the cutting edge without you. I'm a refugee. I have left all. I am on the front lines, and like the United States military, for every soldier out shooting his gun, even a soldier who's not elite, even a soldier who's not on the cutting edge, have 17 soldiers behind him, cooking, loading trucks, driving trucks, flying planes, fueling vehicles. The apostle writes of the support structure in the Lord's army when he says, "Who goeth a warfare any time at his own charges," in 1 Corinthians 9:7. The apostle is stating that the soldier on the front lines needs his brothers and sisters behind him. Would you do that for your brother Sam? Would you help me to stay on the air? Would you write out an envelope, write me a note, put in a few colones or quetzales, some Mexican or Argentine pesos or any of the pesos of the world, or send me some American dollars while they're still worth something? Someday, very soon, they won't be. But above all, I want your inscription. I want your enlistment. I want you to take up the sword. Take up the sword of the Spirit, which is the Word of God, and take up the sword. Uncle Sam and the Gospel Gunslingers want you. Orphans Preferred. Co-starring with Stallone in Rambo 4 is actress Julie Benz, who plays Sarah, the lady missionary. Julie is quite an accomplished actress, and I was shocked at the contrast between her role of Sarah in Rambo and her role in Boondock Saints 2, where she plays the investigator, a criminologist, really, and that's a fantastic role. It's a sultry role, and very different than from Rambo, where she plays Sarah, a Christian missionary, who's very modest. Nevertheless, the Thai pirates spot. Is that a woman? You have to see the subtitles because it's all in an Asian language. But as they pull over Rambo's boat, wanting to take whatever they got, money, goods, whatever, they see that they have a woman with them. Oh, I'm getting ahead of myself. Here first, the pacifist preacher, the medical doctor, who is also Sarah's fiancé, asks Rambo to take them upriver.
I was told it might be possible to rent your boat. We'd like to do that. Is that possible? We need to get upriver.
Where are you going?
Into Burma.
Burma's a war zone.
Well, that's what people call it, but it's more like genocide than war. Anyway, this will be my fifth trip in, so we are aware of all the risks.
I don't go that far north.
Let me explain our situation. Our church is part of a Pan-Asian ministry located in Colorado. We're all volunteers who, around this time of year, bring in medical supplies, medical attention, prayer books, and support for the Karen tribes people. People say, you know the river better than anyone.
They lied.
So what I'm asking is that we compensate you for a few hours of your time that will help change people's lives.
Are you bringing in any weapons?
Of course not.
You're not changing anything.
Well, it's thinking like that that keeps the world the way it is.
Fuck the world.
Are you bringing any weapons? You're not changing anything. See, Rambo's trying to teach this pacifist preacher what his own Bible is full of, that there are wicked men, corrupt men, men of corrupt minds, that are brute beasts born to be caught and destroyed, that there is man's work to be done in the dark parts of the world that no amount of lisping and simpering will eradicate. On top of all that, they have a woman on their team. They're going to take a woman into this war zone. I'll tell you from bitter experience that it's a horrible handicap not having sisters on your mission team. But we also see that even Abraham, the father of faith, was terrified to take his Sarah out amongst the heathen and the uncircumcised. In the end, it is Sarah herself that convinces Rambo to take the team upstream. She's a true missionary, and she stood in the rain waiting for Rambo and then talked with him, pleaded with him, "Please, we want to help these people." Rambo relents, and up the river they go. Before long, darkness falls, and they're benighted deep in Indian country.
What is it? Who are they?
Burmese pirates. Tell everyone to stay down, don't make a sound.
Who are they? It's all right, it's all right. Just keep...
Don't talk.
On a boat.
Sit down.
If it's money they want, give it. Stop.
Nobody talks. Heads down.
Keep your heads down and nobody look them in the eye, they'll kill you.
pirates storm up in their gunboat and throw grappling hooks across to board their vessel. Yes, this is not ancient history. Piracy is on an explosive rise in the world today. I said Thai pirates. In this story, they're Burmese. Much of this movie was filmed in Thailand. And for myself, the idea of Thai pirates kind of sticks in my head. A fellow black belt of mine, when we were students practicing together, told me about family friends of his who were Vietnamese. They were refugees. They came to this country. They were so glad, so thankful to live in the United States of America in a peaceful place. They opened a series of nail salons and became great Americans. One of them, I'm told, was denied his vanity license plate because he wanted B-O-A-T-P-P-L, boat people, boat people. They said, no, you can't have that. That's derogatory. And he said, we're boat people. That's how we came to America. We're refugees. The DMV would not let him have it, but they were so thankful to be in the U.S. of A. and in a peaceful nation where they could prosper, where they could have nice cars, where they could work hard, and no one would take what they gained, because they were accustomed to piracy and theft and this type of kleptocracy that's described in Rambo. And when they left Vietnam on the boat looking for asylum, they were attacked by Thai pirates, and they came and took everything, took all their food, raped all the women. That is exactly what these pirates are thinking. They see Sarah. She's down huddled under her hat, but they spot that yellow hair, and they know that that's a woman. They said, give her here, bring her now! Well, this is a gunboat that's rolled up on them. It's got mounted twin 50 cals. All the pirates on deck that are ready to board have AKs, and I mean, they're ready to rumble. And Rambo's got nothing but a boatload of sheep and Sarah. In the blink of an eye, from concealment, Rambo draws his Colt 45 and fires 6 shots.
We came here to help stop the killing. Who are you to
tell?
Who are you?
Let him go.
He would have raped her 50 times and cut your fucking heads off. Who are you? Who are any of you? Come back.
Rambo had to curse and give a moral lesson to the pacifist preacher. What really rubbed that preacher wrong is when Rambo caught the last guy squirming, and he was reaching for his weapon, but Rambo fires his 7th shot and drills him right through the head. And before Rambo choked him, grabbed him by the neck to give him his moral lesson, he was saying, who are you to judge? Who are you to judge? But Rambo was right. They would have raped Sarah 50 times and cut their whole team's heads off. Welcome to the jungle, coming to an inner city near you. War after war, siege after drought, king after king as the regencies expire and new rulers take over, Elisha the prophet is gaining a tremendous amount of momentum and strength. He sends to anoint Jehu, one of the sons of the prophets. There are sons of the prophets, there are other prophets, there's a school of the prophets in the time of Elisha. And that promise of the 7,000, that actually happened. That happened early. Elijah was still alive, I suppose. That happened under Ahab. Yes, there was deliverance, even though the wicked king Ahab ordered the battle himself. It's in 1 Kings 20 and 15. And Paul the Apostle brings it up in Romans 11, 4-5, and says that today there is a remnant chosen by the election of grace, that there's a remnant even today. And what did the 7,000 do? Each one slew his man. And that's what I'm going to do on your GospelGunslingers.com Bible verse of the day today, as always, is teach you what Jehu did and what the remnant must do to bring their nation and world back from the grip of the wicked. Do you think the president of El Salvador thought this up on his own? No, he read these stories. He was exposed to the preaching of the word and to the Bible. Jehu kills the son of Ahab with an epic bow shot at great distance. Then he goes and finds the wicked queen mother, Jezebel, and this is where he gets a little bit of audience participation. He says, who is with me? Who's on the Lord's side? And the eunuchs throw her down out of the tower, and Jehu was ready with the whip and trod her down. He ran her over with his chariot horses. The dogs licked her blood, but there were 70 more sons of Ahab. So I want you to see in 2 Kings 10 what Jehu does. He sends to the elders that were their tutors and says, look, you have horses, you have chariots, you have a wall, you have weapons of war. Pick out the goodliest, pick out the strongest of your master's sons and set him up on his throne and fight for your master and his house. But the terror of Jehu had fallen on them. Jehu was a nobody. It was the word of the prophet that exalted him and caused the fear of God to go before him. And the masters, the tutors, say, we will not make any king. They surrendered, and Jehu gave him this order. Send me the heads of the 70 sons of Ahab. And they cut him off, executed all 70 of them, sent him the heads in baskets. And then, here's what Jehu did. Verse 11, so Jehu slew all that remained of the house of Ahab in Jezreel, and all his great men, and all his kinsfolks, and his priests, until he left him none remaining. Continuing in 2 Kings 10:17, and when he came to Samaria, he slew all that remained unto Ahab in Samaria, till he had destroyed him, according to the saying of the Lord which he spake to Elijah. That, friends, is how you drain a swamp. Rambo gave that mission team what they wanted, what they thought that they wanted, as Captain Willard famously said, I wanted a mission, and for my sins they gave me one. Rambo takes them upriver, and they're distributing their medicine and they're preaching when the village is attacked by guerrillas. It's a massacre, really, the type of massacre that happens in Africa every day, that happens in villages in Central America and in jungles, in the jungles of Mexico, that happens in cartel country. They come in, mortar shells go off, children dying, body parts flying. It's a rage of violence and horror that's unimaginable to the Americans who are then taken captive. Rambo is back in his thatch hut, sleeping in his hammock. As the thunder rolls, he's having a terrible nightmare of all the men that he's killed, and of his desperate struggle for righteousness and justice, so often against his own nation and against his own culture, totally aside from the guerrillas, aside from the narco-terrorists. He's awakened out of his sleep by the head pastor who's come from Colorado and is standing in the jungle in his business suit in the rain calling for Rambo.
It's over!
Nothing is over!
How are you gonna come full circle? I know the reasons you're here.
No!
Aren't you curious to see how things might have changed back home?
Not enough damage!
You're always gonna be tearing away at yourself until you come to terms with what you are. Until you come full circle. No!
So you're just gonna stay here forever?
Josh!
Rambo! Rambo!
John Rambo!
John? John Rambo? My name is Arthur March, pastor of the Christ Church in Colorado. I need to talk with you. It's very important. I wouldn't come here like this if it wasn't.
What happened?
No one knows exactly. They were supposed to return 10 days ago, but they never came back. I requested help from the embassy, but they can't help. Not in Burma, and not in time.
Have I committed an offense in abasing myself? Asks the apostle. He asks to the people hearing his preaching, he says, are you ashamed of my poverty? Because I came to you and preached the gospel freely. So, yeah, this is what it took for me to offer the gospel to you freely. And this was coming from Pastor Sam and the Gospel Gunslingers, someone who has walked out of Las Vegas into the desert on his own 2 feet, got sunburned and everything. This is what it takes for someone to offer the gospel to you free of charge. And this while the fat cats are sitting around thinking about, are our barns big enough? Can it hold all our stuff? Oh, will moth and rust destroy? Will thieves break in and steal? Will our bank fail? Oh no, will our bank fail? Are our deposits insured? Listen, the dollar is paper. It's going to be gone someday. Someday very soon. So how did the gospel get to you? How did this word of the Lord get to your ear? Here it is in your gospelgunslingers.com Bible verse of the day, 2 Corinthians 10:8. I robbed other churches, taking wages of them to do you service. Yes, my miracle donor showed up to bring the word of God to you. And now all that's gone. Now that's exhausted. You know, the apostle says in 10 and 16, to preach the gospel in the regions beyond you. There's jungles that I would like to go to and to take the word of the Lord. And I have to battle against the false apostles. Look at this, 11:4. For if he that cometh preacheth another Jesus, whom we have not preached, or if ye receive another spirit which ye have not received, or another gospel which ye have not accepted, ye might well bear with him. So you know what happened after my miracle donor showed up? And aside from what he sowed financially, I was glad to have an armor bearer. I was glad to have a no-neck. Don't you know that he has a duty to help me in the battlefield, to stand behind me when I'm preaching with a bat? All right, that may be figurative. Of course, it may be very literal, because I'll tell you what, in the coming revivals, the elders are going to throw a lot of people out on their ear, and they will be in outer darkness, figuratively and literally, and there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Yes, literally, the false apostles showed up with the same pacifist gospel, the same sit-in-your-church-pew gospel, the same false prophecy in the purple background lights. How grabastic is that? For I am jealous over you with godly jealousy, for I have espoused you to one husband. And here come the false apostles, and here comes the pacifist gospel telling you to sit back down in your pew. Okay, we are just about to go to press. It is Monday, the markets have been open for hours, and now we know how things are shaping up. It is dismal. Indeed, but I'm going to give you the real breakdown. You may not get this anywhere else. We are having today an extended no holds barred segment. So I'm going to tell you what's really up. Okay, first of all, if you have dollars anywhere in the world, they're not safe. They're not at all safe. You need to get out of the dollar. You need to get out of the banks. But then this begs another question. Where are you going to go? Some people are buying government debt because the Federal Reserve raised the interest rates, and so everybody's saying, oh, the crisis happened because the new government debt has higher interest rates that pay more to investors, and so the older government debt from a year ago or 2 years ago isn't as attractive. That is all smoke and mirrors. I know all the stockbrokers believe that, but their whole life is built on the sinking sand, the shifting sands of the fiat dollar. Once the dollar falls, once the dollar system comes apart, then that's when they jump out the window of the skyscraper, and there's no other way for them because it's their god. For many of you listening, the dollar is your god also. And just like in China, where Christianity is intended to cause the citizen, the subject, the slave, to be a better slave, to be a better slave, to slave harder, in America, Christianity is often used, it is often bent, it's often twisted to make people better slaves to the dollar. This is idolatry, and I beg you, don't be an idolatrer. That's a joke. That's a pun. Idolatry. Yeah, don't bow down to the dollar. I thank God that I have an adopted country. But you know what? I'm using my position in this adopted country to reach out to you. And that's why my life is difficult. If I were just going to retire in the jungle like Rambo and live day by day, that would have been the easy part in my adopted country. But my life is very difficult because I reach out to you, because I am continuing to hold out my hands to a rebellious people. And I love my nation, and I love the people of my nation. I love the American people of the world. But right now, I have to command you to repent and to escape with what you can escape with. Okay, so where do you run? I wrote an article in January. It's up on my blog on subscribestar.com/gospelgunslingers. Or you can go to gospelgunslingers.com and hit the subscribe star button, the SS button. You go there, and there's my article about how, of all the currencies of the world, the dollar was reigning supreme and dominating them all, except for one. And what currency is that? The Mexican peso. This trend has continued not only through the entire last year, but into February and now into March. The Mexican peso has stood its ground against every assault that the dollar made. Right now, the market's in volatility, so there's a little bit of fluctuation, which fortunately is to the advantage of the holder of dollars. But let me just tell a little bit more. Mexico is a production economy. All the factories and all the jobs that went south with a great suck and sound, many of them are in the Rio Grande Valley. They're in Monterrey. Huge factories. Monterrey is an industrial city beyond belief. All of those factories are in Mexico. And I'm not talking about sweatshops making sneakers. Okay, there are maquiladoras. There are sewing shops that make sewn items and clothes and shoes. Thank God for my Mexican-made shoes that no Chinaman has ever touched, that have Mexican leather, that don't have toxic chemicals all in it that poison your feet. But I'm talking about technology. I'm talking about Ford engines are made in Mexico. Television sets, LG, all kinds of things are made in Mexico. Aside from manufacturing and agricultural production, Mexico is a petroleum exporter. It is an exporter of petroleum and a significant petroleum producer. On Thursday, President Lopez of Mexico received an honored guest, the Secretary General of OPEC. Mexico had never received a visit from an OPEC official at all, and now the head, the Secretary General of all OPEC, the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries that includes Saudi Arabia and Russia and all these great exporters of oil in the world, came to Mexico. His name is Mr. Haitham Al-Ghais, G-H-A-I-S, and the tweet is up on my Gospel Gunslingers Twitter. This is why all the neocon Republicans are all of a sudden talking about invading Mexico. And I'm talking about Bill Barr, whom Donald Trump called an incompetent bushy. I'm talking about Dan Crenshaw, the turncoat with the eye patch, who came in and ran as this great war hero and turned out to be a CIA cutout that wants to take Americans' guns away. And Lindsey Graham, that close friend of John McCain, if there ever was a warmonger. These are the warmongers of the world. And we denounce them as Republicans, myself, as a conservative. I denounce these people in my party, but they understand that there is a threat to the petrodollar and to dollar dominance and dollar hegemony, and that the only nation, which is in our hemisphere at least, which is standing on its own two feet, is Mexico. And so that's why there's talk of war. There's talk of an invading across the Rio Grande. And I'll tell you this. This may come as a shock, but Mexico is well able to defend itself from a neocon-led military attack, even without foreign alliances. Mexico has a lot of defensive capability that is not publicly known. I've published it. The article's called Missile Bases of the Rio Grande Valley, if you're interested. Okay, so to explain the strength of the peso, which I'm sure is amazing to the American mind, we've just discussed Mexico's industry and industrial and fabrication production, their factory output, and we have discussed Mexico as an oil producer and an oil exporter that's self-sufficient in gasoline and diesel at this point right now as infrastructure is continuing to be built. But there's a third major reason that Mexico's is a strong and resilient economy that can handle much buffeting right now and is truly self-sufficient. And that is, Mexico is an agricultural powerhouse. A powerhouse. and the agriculture is diversified. These huge factory farms that you see in the USA, you just don't see that in Mexico. Everything's on a much smaller scale, and sometimes a truly micro scale, where people in villages are farming, often with animals and without even motors. And so that's an additional redundancy that is just completely lacking in the United States, outside of maybe the Amish and Mennonite communities. Just weeks ago, United States politicians had to come on bended knee with their hat in their hand and beg President López Obrador to buy American corn, which is nearly all GMO. The agricultural industry of the United States has just refused to shift over to renewable and natural products, even though Mexico's had this policy in place with a firm start date for 3 years. And who had to come begging the president of Mexico, please, 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 please buy our corn? American politicians. And I'm not talking about Biden and the loonies. I'm talking about conservative politicians like my Iowa Senator Joni Ernst, who's very sharp on agricultural issues, understood that without the Mexican market, this corn will have no place to go. Hear me, people of the world. The safe haven in these trying times is Mexico, Mexico, Mexico. Mexico and the Mexican peso. You have to get out of the dollar and get into the peso. And I'm not talking about pesos held in an American bank. I'm talking you have to get your money into the peso and into Mexico before your bank collapses. And let me just tell you where they're at as of this recording, Monday afternoon. Reading from the Daily Mail, dailymail.co.uk, and this article was updated afternoon on Monday today. Trading temporarily halted in dozens of banks after shares fell by up to 75% when market opened at 9:30 a.m., moments after Biden said, quote, U.S. banking is safe, unquote. As contagion spreads to heavyweights, Wells Fargo, Bank of America, and J.P. Morgan. Just last night, a friend of mine was telling me, oh, my money's in Chase. That's J.P. Morgan Chase. And it is a big boy. It is a big bank, but they also are receiving infection. Let's hear what Lion Joe Biden himself has to say. Here's James O'Keefe's secret recording of the president, the acting president of the United States, today.
Like all the money's gone, and a lapse, a flash, flupper, a collapse is imminent. But we have to stay calm and think of ways to prevent a bank run, so we can get ours. Let's ensure that all banks are walking, flocking, talking with each other, and sharing information in real time using the back channels we set up in October. And let's use the full force of the media to calm the public and to assure them that their deposits are safe. We may not be able to prevent a collapse, but if we work together, we can limit the fallout for us and preserve the continuity of government.
Did you hear what he said, folks? All the money's gone. A collapse is imminent, but we have to think of ways to prevent bank runs. We have to think of ways to prevent a bank run so that we can get out. Then he says to his shadowy group, we need to keep talking to one another using the back channels that we set up in October. So these fat cats, these co-conspirators, are not even speaking openly. They're using back channels so that they can get out of this crisis. What about the American people getting out? What about you getting out? Oh, there's no plan for you. Joe Biden continues. Let's use the full force, full weight of the media to convince the public that their deposits are safe. And then he says, we may not be able to prevent a collapse. But then he continues, and this is the kicker. If a collapse occurs, we can ensure continuity of government. That is, the very people that perpetrated this disaster, the very guilty parties, are going to continue in power. That's their plan. My fellow Americans, it's time to run. It's time to run for the border, and you have to get your money out of the country. I'll tell you right now, if you send it to me, I'm keeping your tithe. You all have ignored my warnings for too long. I'm keeping your tithe for myself.
The circuit riding preacher used to ride across the land with a rifle on his saddle and a Bible in his hand. He told the prairie people all about the promised land as he went riding, singing down the trail.